Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and I'm up here in the Pacific Northwest where the sun is shining and it's crisp and cool. Spring has its wonderful, wonderful gift that it's giving us today. You would never know that we had freezing temperatures during the night, but that's okay. And we're going to be warming up to a subject that I know that all of you really, really enjoy, and that has to do with the paranormal, as so often it is described by many people who are not familiar with its natural laws. But we're going to get some education about that today. We have David Baker as a guest. The Spirit Garden, A Medium's Journey is the name of his book. And for those of you who are interested in exploring your own psychic abilities, you might find this book very insightful and very informative. David, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you, Donna. It's wonderful to be here.
Well, it's really always good to talk to someone that has walked a road of their own independent directioning and finally recognize their own gifts. Being in the work myself for so many years, it's always a pleasure to interview other people who have a love and a passion for it as I do. Now, David, you are a psychic medium yourself, and you really have liked working in this arena, but this wasn't a journey that happened overnight. This was a journey that started a long time ago. In fact, when you were quite a small boy, you had a number of experiences. Why did you want to write this book? It would be so easy to not even bother with it. What compelled you to want to put into print your particular story?
Well, that's funny, because the first thought ever I had was perhaps in my teens when I thought, wouldn't that be cool if I was famous and wrote a book one day, and that's it. But after that, I had no ambition to. I knew I wasn't a writer or anything like that. After the journey I went through, people kept suggesting that I should tell my story in words, and I said, well, I can't write a book. But after what I went through, I looked back on it, and I started writing on a computer just for fun, I saw that there really was a story here that people need to hear, not just about my abilities, but there's a lesson in there too, and I thought perhaps it could be helpful to others, so I just wanted to get the word out to more people.
Well, I think that's very good, because I think it's important for people to understand that there's no black and white route to developing and recognizing that you have intuitive gifts. It is given to all of us, but it's given to us in different levels, in different ways. Now, you were born in San Francisco, but when you were little, you ended up in England. Tell us how that happened.
Well, my mother met my father in England during the war, so she was a war bride. And I think her husband died in the bombings in London, and she met my father. And after the war, she came to the United States and started a family. But she had some deep-seated problems from the war, which caused alcoholism in her. And she had many, many problems, and she ended up leaving the father, going back with a male friend she knew, took her back to England to be with him, and we stayed there for a few years.
Now, one of your first experiences that you remember was in 1959, and you said you were about 9 or 10 years old, and you said it was a memory. She said she was going to the store, and you never saw her again. She just was out of your life. She walked away out of your life. And with that kind of a trauma, with someone as young as that, there were a lot of things that affected you mentally and emotionally.
Yes.
How was that adjustment? How do you think that affected the beginning of your intuitive awareness?
It brought out a great deal of emotion, and I'm the type of person that was really shy back then. I didn't like to show too many things, so I kind of kept it to myself. And the time where I really focused on my mother having leaving me, which really hurt me deeply because I had a profound love and connection with my mother, was every night when I went to sleep for probably about 6 months, thought about her and how much I missed her and how much it hurt and hoped that she'd come back, and I just cried myself to sleep. And that really got things going with me. But I fortunately, you know, somehow kept it under control, didn't go see the psych or anything like that.
Now, you were experiencing at a very young age astral projection, intense dreaming, and I can relate to that because I remember that happening myself. But you mentioned two words that I thought were very interesting. Astral catalepsy. Explain what those two words mean to you.
There were some times where I felt, I tried to explore and research and was it like old hag syndrome? Did somebody come in my room and try to abduct me? You know, I was frozen. What was the thing? And I found out that a great possibility that perhaps since I was doing it so much and I was so young that I had something that had awakened my physical body up before my spirit came back from the its travels. And being that it's not in my body yet, I was awake and I was, you know, frozen. I just couldn't move. And I stayed at that state until it came back to my body, and then I was able to move again. And that's my belief as to perhaps what that may be.
Now, as you grew up, your father remarried. He didn't marry a particularly nice person. You went through that difficulty. But you became more and more aware of things that were going on around you, and eventually you were able to move out on your own. And in the late 60s, things started occurring to you. I mean, you signed up for the U.S. Army, and you ended up being sent off to the Republic of South Korea. And then, eventually, you were discharged, and you got an honorable discharge. But you started having some experiences with visitors, and that was a little bit disconcerting. What was going on there?
I believe it was when I was moved out and got a cheap studio, the cheapest I could find in a pretty lousy area, so I can be independent. It's a really old building in San Francisco, and there's a lot going on in there, but, you know, you feel stuff all the time. You're used to it. You don't pay attention to it. But I started feeling in this room that there is somebody there, you know, it's a very powerful feeling. And when I thought about it, relaxed, and kind of like locked into it, it felt like there was a woman staring at me and some others that were kind of like more back in the distance. And one night, do you want me to tell you more about what happened there a little bit? One night I was in bed, it was about 3:30 in the morning, and I felt I had to waken up to roll over, and I was adjusting the covers to get comfortable again, when suddenly I felt like somebody just sat down, dropped the whole weight at the end of the bed, and that startled me. I was already awake, so I reached for the light to see who had come into the room, and there was nobody there. And about 2 weeks later, at the same time, the same things, I move around in my sleep a lot. I'm kind of like a light sleeper at times. The covers started to pull off of my bed, so I opened my eyes and just to make sure I was awake, and the covers kept going down and down and down. After about perhaps a foot, I grabbed the covers and pulled them back and looked up and saw a female there that was perhaps in her mid-30s, looking at me with a huge smile on her face, bent over slightly like she was the one that was pulling the covers, and I said, hey, please let me sleep. If you want to come and communicate with me, come during the day, but I have to get up early in the morning and go to work, and that was it.
That's an amazing story. I've known many people. In fact, there was a trance medium that I had a chance to know and interact with many years ago, and he would say, if you don't like the company when they start visiting, tell them to get lost. And that's what you did, and it works, because they often have to be there. They will be there. They'll use your energy so that they can materialize, and if there's a harmonic between you and them, it's very positive. But that was a very direct order, and so they said, okay, makes sense to me, and then she moved on. Now, you started questioning. You were seeing what would be described as ghosts. You were aware of these personalities. But you weren't really educated on this. How did you go about educating yourself about ghosts and visitors from the other side?
Two different times, actually, I believe. The latest was a few years back in the 90s. The earliest was around about that specific time that we just discussed. I had a lot of time on my hands being a single person. I went to the library. I loved to read even then. And I came across some books on ghosts. I started to read that when I saw something nearby that said ESP, as I had those type of experiences as well, and I started reading up on them, and I started doing research on it and testing things out, and I found a book on that explained about flying in your dreams, so I decided to try it again deliberately instead of letting it happen, and then I got away from that until the 90s, but that's where originally I started looking into the subject before I started to get back away from it again.
Now, you started investigating astral projections. You were doing ESP. You were very curious about this. You worked as a night watchman. And you said every place that you worked as a night watchman, there were always ghosts. And you had physical sensations, you know, like your hair standing up on the back of your neck or a chill going up your spine. You knew something was going on. So this was a process of evolution. And then you decide that you're going to become a Marine. And you went to Hawaii. Now, was this the big island you were on, or was it Oahu?
Oahu.
Oahu. Well, having been to the islands, and I know about some of the legends there, you had a very, very unique experience. You didn't believe. You were testing the Hawaiian myth, so to speak, as they have often been spoken of, and you found out it wasn't a myth. What was the sacred place that you went to, and what was your experience when you were there?
I think you're talking about a specific place. There had been many, but one that I discussed in my book that was one of the most profound for me.
Yes, that one.
Was I was on the, at the time, trying to do, improve my life with a better working opportunity, which fell through. I went out for a walk one night just to go out for a walk to release any negativity and feel good, and I ended up going on a long walk. And I ended up in the area near Wailuku on Maui, an old, small hamlet. And I went beyond that a little bit to an area that I'd never been to before. It was pretty much near midnight, I suppose, or somewhere later than that. When suddenly I felt a very, probably the strongest I had ever felt in all my experiences, almost seemingly malevolent type energy. It's like walking into an invisible energy barrier of some type. And as I walked through it, it actually slowed me down to where I had to stop. Everything was going off of my body, my radar. I got goosebumps all over. The hair went up. I wasn't scared, per se, but it gives you that type of feeling. It's like when all the alarms go off, I knew something was there, and so I started to focus in and see a large group of what looked like to me Hawaiian natives and warriors all around me, and started talking to them. And I had just then noticed to my right something I did not see. There's an old burial ground of some type. And these people told me in a very strong way that I must turn around and leave now. And I told them that I didn't want to disturb their place. I just wanted to go further to see what's over there. And they would not absolutely accept it. And the energy was really strong. And I didn't feel like arguing with it at that particular time. And I can see this very tall, powerful, warrior-type personality that had well, it kind of reminded me of the statue of King Kamehameha I had seen in Honolulu. It looked just like that, with other warriors around him, almost like soldier-type protectors. And then there were some women in the background. And so I just turned around, and I said, okay, I'm out of here. I walked away, and probably about 20 feet later, I walked out of the energy. And that was the end of that experience. And I really wasn't afraid to the point to where I'd run away. I'd stood there and talked to them. I thought maybe I must be crazy for hanging around. But for some reason, I was never afraid of ghosts or anything. They've always kind of like been there, so I've accepted that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was just a matter of me dealing with that particular situation.
Well, I know in the islands, there are many places that people just are warned not to go to. And someone listening to the show may say, oh, Donna, that's ridiculous. Well, I think when someone is a sensitive, such as you are, you can become aware of that and you read the information. And I had an experience of that type in Oahu when I was on a business trip and I happened to walk into a certain area. Nobody was around, but it was in the downtown area, and it was very strong that I was to get away from there. And I did, and the feeling was fine. So many times there are sometimes memory patterns, or like you were in a sacred ground area, and that not only happened to you that time, but you wanted to go back many years later, and you found out the same thing was there. So these are like guardians of this sacred site. And there's all these legends in the islands about the marching warriors and other things that are not made up by people. They really have been experienced by others. And I thought your experience was very important. Now, you ended up going through a period that for you was like a period of dark times.
Yes.
And dark nights of the soul. And you go through that. Eventually, you come back to San Francisco. And your life picks up. It's starting to change. And then you encountered a UFO. And I find that so interesting. Now, what happened with that UFO?
Okay, there's probably had about 8 experiences in my life with them, close encounters. And I always try to debunk it or explain it off as something, but since I was in the military and I collected aircraft and all that, those things as a hobby and read books on them, I knew the things that I were dealing with were something that I just couldn't explain. I'm trying to think of which particular UFO incident are you speaking of?
I think it was one of the first that you had.
One of them was when I was about 1957 to 58, somewhere in San Francisco. They'd been talking about it in school, and I heard on the radio that there was one, and when the radio personality described the area, I said, oh, that's right outside. So I ran outside, and there was a soda fountain on the corner, and I saw a crowd of people looking in the sky, and I saw this really close, perhaps 500 feet up in the air, in broad daylight, clear, silver, round object without wings, or it wasn't moving. It definitely wasn't a weather balloon, because I had seen photos of those before. There was no attachments to it or anything. It's just like a round metal sphere. It was completely motionless in the sky. It stayed there for about 20 minutes. Wasn't moving in the wind or anything like that. It had no wings, propellers, windows, anything.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just like vanished about 20 minutes later.
And then you had one not that long ago in 1995. Where there was a very vivid one. It was a Thanksgiving night.
Yes, that one, one of the people in the house came up, come outside, look at this quick. I went outside and looked. probably about 200 yards maximum. It could have been closer. Was this huge sphere again, but this one was glowing. It was, the sky wasn't cloudy, but there was a little fog around the sphere. And it was glowing like a, it looked like a molten metal of orange and red, constantly moving and changing colors. And these looked like melted metal were dripping off of it. And I never thought to go back and pick up some to see, you know, if there's anything there. But it was there. It lasted for perhaps about 5 minutes. It was stationary, then moved back and forth slowly and stopped. It went up and down, stopped. I went to get my video recorder because this would have been really an astonishing film. It was really close and clear, but the batteries died or something happened. I couldn't film it, and then it disappeared.
Now, you ended up working in an environment that a lot of people have no clue about. And you were involved with the Federal Community Mental Health Centers. And you talk about a gentleman that ended up committing suicide in the jail facility that you were working within.
That's correct.
And you talk about so many of the facts. I'm not going to go into that. But what happened with this particular man, his name was John. And you, when you found out he had died, and you knew all of that, you worked on a computer, and there was a fellow nurse called Selena. And he, you said that you've had ghosts in this jail, and there's people that had seen ghosts and had had their own experiences, but they never were too out and out about it. But when you were talking about John, you had a disk that you put into the computer A drive, and you brought up a form that needed to be filled out for an evaluation of his death. And you found that when the form appeared on the computer screen, there was a message on the top of the form that read, and I'm quoting directly from your book, "I did what I had to do. The score is 1-1. The game's over, and I'm out of here." And you said you figured that was done by the spirit of John G., who had wanted to be released from this experience, had finally accomplished it after more than one attempt. And when you printed it out, you showed it to Selena, the nurse, and she could hardly believe what she saw. How did that affect your thinking?
I had heard of those things happening before, appearing on people's computers, messages, and so forth. I was kind of like neutral on it, but I did believe that it was possible. For the first time that happened to me, to tell you the truth, I was totally caught off guard. I was shocked. But mostly I was in awe at this miracle of communication and that this was able to happen, because in real life he was good at computers. So I figured that's perhaps his way of communication. But it took me a while to get over it, because to me this was like astounding. That's the only way I could describe it. I was really excited about it.
Now, you make some comments in your book, and for those of you who are listening, I'm talking with David Baker, who is a psychic medium. The book, The Spirit Garden, this is all about his journey, about what he's gone through, about his studies, about the personal experiences he had, which I think is wonderful because it enables you as a reader to be able to share it in a way that maybe you'd never have a chance to meet David, but this way you can, if you're going through certain experiences, recognize you're not by yourself, you're not alone. I think the more we can talk about things like this and be open about it, the better it is. Now, electronic voice phenomena, you go into all different types of experiences, poltergeist activity, and how you finally met the woman that was to be your partner, and you go into your research and working with different people, because in a way, you sort of are doing like what the character portrayed on Ghost Whisperer does, and that is, you know, sometimes you have those people that haven't been able to move on. They've sort of gotten stuck in a relationship with this experience of life, if you will, and so you help them get unstuck.
Yes.
And I think that that's very good. Tell us an experience that, for you, was so significant and really made you feel like this was the kind of work you wanted to do?
One comes to mind immediately when we got together with some friends. I think the reason that this happened is because we heard that the possibility that Alcatraz Island in San Francisco, the old Alcatraz Penitentiary, was haunted. I hadn't seen anything on TV in those days about it, but his particular home and orchard up north is haunted. And we talked about the subject, so we decided to go to Alcatraz. We found out there's a night tour, kind of, the last tour, so we decided to go on that tour to see what type of experiences we would have. I knew nothing about the history until later, which pretty much confirmed my experience, at least to me. But the dining hall, we went in there, and on our film later, both video and still camera, we there were some abnormalities that we picked up later, which I'll tell you about at the end. But I felt a presence come into the room right away. At first there was nothing, and there was nothing there. Then suddenly I felt a presence come into the room, and I felt it come directly to me. And when it came to me, I looked at it, and I said, first thing I thought is, gee, this is a small ghost. And I focused in, and I could see a little girl, I don't know, probably about 7 or 8 years old, cute little girl in old-style clothing, dress, a blouse, something that looked like from the 50s or 40s or somewhere around there. And I talked with her, and I asked her, what's she doing here? And she didn't really answer me. I asked her name. I forgot what it was. But she wanted to hold my hand because she said there is somebody there that she's really afraid of. So I said, sure. And I extended my hand, and she grasped my two baby fingers on my right hand with it. And once she'd done so, immediately it turned to ice, not to the point of discomfort, but really ice cold, as if I had dumped my two fingers in a bucket of ice water. And I told her, that's all right. You know, you can stay with me. I'm going to be looking around in here. And so I think I must have looked silly with my arm extended a little bit with this little girl in tow, but she was floating off the ground a couple of feet. And I talked with her a little bit and went around, and by the time I left, I told her I have to leave the room now. And she let go and disappeared. When I left the room, my hands returned to normal. And later in the film, the friend had been filming a corner that came out blurry at a certain point, and everything else was sharp. Out of this corner, when I played back the tape in slow motion to see, you know, in various parts of the film, if anything came out, what you would call a spirit orb or energy came sailing through the air, and it went right over to what I was. And I tried to go back and look at the timeline, and I felt that it's a possibility that that was her spirit coming to me, and perhaps she can see something in my aura or something that I could communicate with spirits, so she chose me. I'm not really sure why, but my intention was to make contact with somebody that night.
Well, you did.
And
David,
heart went
you
out
have
to
so
her.
Many wonderful stories in your book about personal experiences. And for those of you listening again, The Spirit Guardian, A Medium's Journey, is, when you read it, an insightful bit of writing because he takes you through so many variables that he himself has gone through. And when you can share that, then it empowers anyone that wants to explore their own possibilities. Or maybe you're having experiences and you say, I don't have anybody to talk to. Well, you can get David's book, The Spirit Guardian, A Medium's Journey, and it will help you. It will really give you an insight into what you need to be aware of, alert to. And one of the things that David recommends is constant learning. David, what's your website that people can go to?
A website, I'm glad you asked that question because it not only tells about my book before they buy it, a lot about me, and has a FAQ page too. It's the thespiritgarden.com. That's my book. www.davidbakerspiritmedium.com. That's davidbakerspiritmedium.com.
Great. So, for those of you that want to find out more about David, that's what you do. David Medium, David Baker, excuse me, David Baker, spiritmedium.com. David, it's been a delight having you as a guest, and much success with your book.
Thank you, Donna.
You're welcome. This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment with more good things to share.
Hello, this is Dr. Richard Petty, the author of Healing, Meaning, and Purpose, and creator of the RichardGPettyMD.com website. I am thrilled and delighted to tell you that starting February 7th, 2008, at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, I'm going to be joining my friend Donna Sebo on her show on bbsradio.com. We're going to do this every month, and I can guarantee you that we're going to be sharing new information and new concepts that will astonish and inspire you.
Do you want to lose weight? Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's T-TAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. TTAP.com.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hi, this is Donna, and telephone lines are now open. 877-876-5227 if you're in the U.S. 877-876-5227. Canadians, toll free, 888-815-9756. Now remember, if this is the first time you've ever heard the show, and, you know, even if you've listened to the show in the past and you say, Donna, what do I do when I call in? All you need to do is give me your first name or your initial. And, of course, I always like to find out about where you're calling from. So just need to do that. It's that simple. In fact, we're going to demonstrate it for you right now. This is our first caller for the day. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
I'm Travis, calling from Evans, Georgia.
Hi, Travis.
How you doing?
I'm doing magnificently. Evans, Georgia. Beautiful country. All right, Travis, let's get down to business. The first thing that is popping into my mind is there are a couple of situations that you're facing. And I, without knowing the details, I have to say this to you. There is one of these two. I'm looking at three. One of them, you need to really get your facts. You're making assessments and judgments without having the right kind of detail. And you cannot assume anything. And this is with one of the three. The second one, you are going to need to follow a particular procedure, whatever the second situation is. It's almost like I'm hearing the words, go by the book. You must go by the exact procedure, regulations, whatever it may be. The third situation that I am looking at has to do with a very personal situation and dealing with the past. And I want to say, face the fear. Face the fear. Otherwise, it's going to haunt you and it's going to sabotage you, especially on the first situation where you are making assumptions. Your assumptions are coming from this third condition. It is undermining the first one that I was picking up on. So do not sabotage yourself because of old belief systems and or assumptions that other people are dishing out. Get the facts first. And you're really going through a shifting and an adjustment cycle this year, big time. You're going to find that much of your established belief system is going to be shaken to its very core. And the reason it's being shaken is because you've got to strip away the old to look at the bare bones of what is, and then reconstitute on those bare bones of fact the meat of what it is you want there. In other words, you're going to have to really have a very strong personal assessment positioning this year. It's very important because it's going to enable you to make breakthroughs. There's no shortcuts here, and it's not necessarily going to be easy. But you're going to be coming across material, situations, all kinds of conditions that are going to challenge you, challenge your thinking. And I don't want you to run. I want you to look at it with clarity because it will change your life so quickly and so efficiently and so well that you'll feel like a whole new person. A year from today, you'll wonder why it took you so long to do it. But we all have to go through our learning curves, and there's no shortcuts. We have to do it in our own way. What did you want to ask me today?
I was going through this arbitration with my former employers, and I'm just wondering how, you know, what this might turn out to be.
All right, I am watching a seesaw. So to me, nothing has really been settled. May I ask what's going on here? Because I see the seesaw going up and down, up and down, up and down. You're in arbitration. What is this about?
I got terminated from a job.
All right.
And I was claiming that it was wrongful termination and racial discrimination.
All right. Do you have the facts about this?
Yes. Well, we kind of present everything. We're doing an interview now with their side.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess it's going to go to an arbitrator, and I guess she will decide, you know, whether there is anything to the case and how she should rule on the case.
All right. Let me make a suggestion to you. And this may be very different from what you would expect. In the arbitration, one of the things that you should get out of this arbitration is that you're given a clean slate by the company, and that at no time will there be any slander, and I'd move on to another company. I'd look at going into another environment. The choice is going to be yours, but the most important thing that you can gain out of this, there might be some type of a compensation, but you want to be sure that you would have some kind of letter of reference and that there's not going to be any kind of a derogatory statement or positioning that would be made against you at any time, that they would be held responsible for that if it was done.
Okay.
Am I making sense?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. So what I would like for you to do, and this again is going to shift your thinking a bit, but I think this whole experience is about what I just mentioned to you right at the beginning without knowing anything about it. You are going through a major change in your life, and this is one of them. And it's important not to look at it with the eyes and the perceptions of the past. Do not get caught up with other people's attitudes or feelings. You must have clarity with your own integrity and your own positioning. And just be aware that you want this so that it is going to be a clean break.
Okay.
That's very important.
Okay.
And don't be afraid to move on to a new experience. But that's something that, as I'm perceiving it, this company is not going to be anything you'd be involved with for the rest of your life.
No.
And there is no such thing as job security. It never has existed. It's a myth. It's been perpetuated for generations. It does not exist. So that is something that you must be at peace with and look at where you want to see yourself. But you've got to take care of this situation first, because it is dealing with a shifting of perceptions about yourself, about life, about where you want to be. So I think you are having a very valuable experience, and it's going to be up to you as to how you use it, in your favor or
yes.
against you.
Okay.
I wish you well.
Thank you.
You're more than welcome, sir. Thank you for calling in. This is Donna Sebo. You can do the same. The telephone number to call in to is 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. And just like with Travis, all I want is your first name or initial, and then I'd like to know where you're calling from. Now, I do want to repeat to those of you that maybe were not tuned in the past few days, for those of you in the state of Washington, there was a Psychic Spectrum Expo, and it had to be canceled, so there will be no appearance by myself or any of the other people that were featured, and you just need to know that. So if you had plans on coming, just know the event has been canceled, the 22nd, the 23rd, and the 24th, and I feel that that's very important that I repeat the information so that if you didn't get it, you will get it. Flying. Oh, I love to fly. I just absolutely love it. I know there are those people out there that don't. Well, as a person that has to fly fairly frequently, and this year it's more than I've done in the past few years, we're always concerned, one, about how we manage the flying. And, of course, with those of you that are going to be planning on flying maybe for spring break that's going to be coming up or for the summer or whatever, you always have to be aware of the fact, because of the changes, 9/11 just turned everything on its ear, you must be sure you're at the airport early. Well, I found, especially with my recent travels, that it's going to behoove me to buy some new luggage, because the luggage that I have, the weight of one piece without anything in it, for example, is 15 pounds. And now they've come out with luggage that is so much lighter. I mean, it's amazing. So if you're going to be traveling, be aware. You want to make your luggage the lightest it possibly can be so that you're going to get the most amount of poundage when you travel that you possibly can. And if you're like me, maybe you have to do an expo or you have to do an appearance somewhere and you want to be able to just take two bags and you've got to have everything in one bag, shop around. Because there are some wonderful pieces of luggage, and I've got some more tips for traveling. But we're going to go to our next caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Charles, Sedona, Arizona.
Hi, Carl. Now, Carl, I need to tell you, we'll be going on break in about a minute and a half. So if I break away, please stay on the line. Do not hang up, okay?
All right.
Because we'll do that. Now, Carl in Sedona, Arizona, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
I do want to say to you right off the bat, you've got a very, very good patterning with money, and you're doing your homework on financial planning, which I think is excellent. I want you, though, to be sure that in the doing of the financial planning, you also have a cash reserve, actual cash dollars, that you can have access to at any time, and try to maintain that cash backbone, if you will, because it's going to work as a superb leverage for you when it comes to doing some investments. So be aware, you've got a lot going for you. You don't need to be impatient. You've got a very clear focus on where you want to be, what you want to accomplish, and I compliment you on that. Now, we are having to go to break, Carl. Stay with me. Don't hang up.
All right.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. If you decide you want to call in, 877-876-5227 or 888-815-9756. We're going to be coming back and talking with Carl in just a moment. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Before I go back to Charles, who's on the line waiting, I do want to mention, tomorrow we're going to be talking with Masha Malka. She has a delightful publication called The 1 Minute Coach, and I met Masha at the National Publicity Summit in New York City, and she is delightful. She's originally from Russia, and these are tips and things that she wants to share with people because she said they really, really work. So she is a 1 Minute Coach. We'll be talking to her in Spain tomorrow, so you're not going to want to miss that. Also on Friday, we've got a fabulous guest, Jack Perconte. This is a former professional baseball player. He has put out the best book on 6,000 hitting lessons, and this is for kids. So we're at the beginning of the baseball season. A lot of stuff is going on, and if you're in Little League or you know about kids or you just love baseball, you're not going to want to miss this wonderful, wonderful man's insightful information. It's just really terrific. Yes, we talk about anything on the Donna Sebo Show. Let's go back to Charles. I was calling him Carl, and Charles, I must apologize.
Oh, that's all right. I answered anything.
You had got to be careful about that one.
A good point.
Charles, what's your question for me today?
Well, you did hit on it with the financial comments. It's job-related in my finances. I've worked for the same company for about 6-7 years now. It's a small company.
Mm-hmm.
And the owner is talking of closing it down later on this year, and I was wondering if you had any ideas if this is really going to happen or it might be extended.
No, I think he really needs to. And the reason I think he needs to close down the business, he has been holding off on this for a while. This has been his baby. And he's really dedicated to it. This has really torn the man up quite a bit. But when he looks at the numbers, he has not had what I'd call the professional support he should have. And economically, I don't know that he can take the pressure. I will tell you what could turn this company around is if he had someone that could really be a good coach for him. But he's on the fence. In one perspective, because this has been his baby, so to speak, but he just doesn't know how to be in the competitive marketplace and to be able to make it happen without taking a very high-risk positioning, and he doesn't know that he's ready to do that. What kind of a company is it, Charles?
We do computer security training for large corporations and the federal government.
All right. He's been in trouble for a while, and he doesn't know how to take what he's got and put it into a positive twist so that it is going to be able to compound itself properly. Now, he has a number of options he can work with, but you're not just dealing with how we could make it better or what we could do with it. It's a lot of his emotional self as well. So I think that if he wanted to save the company, he needs some real good outside persons with, of reputability that are going to be able to counsel him. And he needs to look at a 5-year plan. On the other hand, he feels that the cost to him, mentally, emotionally, and physically and spiritually, he doesn't know that he wants to go that route. Mm-hmm. Have you had a long talk with him at all?
Off and on over the last several months, yes.
Has he really been open in his conversations, or do you find that my perception is that he only tells you what he thinks you want to hear?
That'd probably be the best way to describe it. It's very emotional at this point, so I only get bits and pieces, and I know that she's trying not to freak everybody out, but holding back.
All right, let me make, how many employees does he have?
I think maybe at the most 6.
All right. Is there any way, do you think the other employees, would they be open to having a brainstorming session and then collectively going into the boss and saying, look, this is what we see. We understand this is very emotional for you. No one who really loves what they do wants to give up the business. But we would like to have the straight shot here. We need to know the truth. Have you thought of doing something like that?
I've toyed with the idea. The interesting thing about our company is none of the employees know anybody else because we're literally scattered all over the country.
Well, so there's always the telephone.
With, you know, FedEx and email, you know, you don't even have to be in the same office anymore, let alone the same state.
I would say telephone is better. A telephone conference, and if you could interact with each of them and then maybe do some brainstorming. There's also, you know, internet conferencing that you can do. There's so many things. You're so much more sophisticated than I am about this, so you can put it together. But with that small a group, and if the other people have a very strong feeling about this company and really want to make it work, maybe that will help him make a turnaround. But you have to understand that, again, just as you said earlier, this is very emotional. And unless he detaches from the emotion, then there's not going to be an opportunity to do what is necessary to make this company survive. And he knows that.
Yeah. So I get the feeling that she's just exhausted and just doesn't want to fight anymore.
Well, there needs to be that openness with the employees. And if your boss is willing to listen, that may give renewed vigor. If not, you need to start looking for something sooner rather than later.
Okay. That was
your
my
homework,
biggest concern.
Because
yeah.
this may be something she has to do just for herself, just for her own journey. And it's not good, it's not bad. But I think if there are those of you that are loyal and that if all 6 of you have a very strong feeling about this, then all 6 of you need to come together as a team, not to bash, not to bruise, but to support and say, how can we work with you? We know you're tired. We know you're exhausted. How can we help something change or shift? And if it's not going to be possible, have integrity with us and let us know what's our timeline.
Okay. That makes sense.
Just a suggestion, but talk with the other 5 people.
Okay.
All right, Charles.
Thank you so much, Donna.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you for calling in and participating in the show.
You're quite welcome. Thank you.
Have a great day.
You
this
too.
Is
Bye-bye.
Donna Sebo. My goodness, time goes by so quickly. Well, I'll just have to share more travel stuff with you later on. This is Donna Sebo. Tomorrow we're going to have the one-minute coach, Masha Malka. We'll be talking with her in Spain. A lovely, lovely woman that has some wonderful things to share. And you are going to find out what they are right here on bbsradio.com. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Don't be afraid to explore. Don't be afraid to open your mind to new opportunities. You never know what part of yourself you may discover or perhaps rediscover that could change your life and empower you in ways you never even dreamed. This is Donna Sebo. We'll look forward to talking with you same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.